Good evening and welcome to the Sports Show 101.4 on FM. I'm Rob Mulhern and joined in the studio tonight by Brendan Horgan and Neil Bleedsdale. Now, coming up on the show tonight, we're going to be talking Ashes. We're going to be hearing from Frank Maloney about women's boxing being accepted into the Olympics. And we're going to welcome ABA boxing champion Shakira Lee into the studio. On top of that, we're going to be talking football, Formula One, Champions League, lots of other stuff as well. But Brendan, what a week it's been with the Ashes, England. Great victory last weekend.
Absolutely amazing. We spoke last week about having a bottle of champagne in here to celebrate the great Ashes victory. And
I still don't see you, Brendan.
No. We're relying on Nicola, who's the governor around here on FM. I'm sure she'll have one nice and chilled for us for the end of the show. But yeah, you're right. It's the 10th Ashes victory ever for England. It was a 2-1 victory. They won it at the fifth test at the Oval with a game to spare. A day to spare, and it was absolutely brilliant. But the question is, how were the Ashes won is the question, right?
And you've a rundown there, Brendan.
I've got a bit of a rundown. I'll do this as quick as possible, make it as not as boring as it could sound, but it's not going to be because it was a victory. But the first test was in Cardiff. As we know, it was a draw. It was the great escape by England. Kevin Peterson scored for the team, but he was caught out by a fairly dodgy sweep, took a risk there. The Australians took a lead of 674. But the rescue started with Paul Collingwood with some great bowling, and James Anderson, as we all remember, and Monty Panesar finished off the day without getting hit out, and they the great escape, they called it in Cardiff, the first Ashes test in Cardiff, and it was a draw. Second test was won by England by 115 runs, making it 1-0 in the series. The Aussies hadn't actually lost at Cricket HQ since 1934. There was a fairly old one. That was the it will be known and remembered as the Freddie Flintoff test. Freddie got 5 wickets and he completely destroyed the Aussie resistance. Andrew Strauss, the captain, had a great start as well.
So that was test 2, Brendan?
Test 2 at Lords, that was. Then we moved on to Birmingham up at Edgbaston, where the weather took out a day and a half of play. Shane Watson's shone for the Aussies as the batting opener, but James Anderson and Graham Onions denied them making a major first innings total. You had 3 half centuries for England, which brought them back in the game, and the Australians looked in trouble until Clark's second 100 of the series. It saved the day. Clark hit a banger, we'll call it. Headingley, an absolute disaster for England. The Aussies won by 80 runs and an innings. And there was no Freddie Flintoff or Kevin Peterson for that test. England were all out for 102 on the first day, which was awful. But Clark and North, who scored heavily then for the Aussies, and the Aussies levelled the series in 2.5 days. But then that moves us on to last week. We all were sipping our pints on Sunday afternoon, watching England win by 197 runs at the Oval to win the series. It seemed like they missed their chance in the first innings, but Stuart Broad and Graham Swan, they took 8 wickets in an afternoon, and that afternoon on
was Stuart Broad the big hero from last weekend, Brendan?
Stuart Broad is the new hero in English cricket. They could be describing as the new Freddie Flintoff. He had an amazing fifth test. He took 5 wickets in the in the last innings, and that was Australia's first innings, and it ended up being Freddie Flintoff running out Ricky Ponting on the fourth day, and that was really the beginning of the end for the Aussies, as we said.
You say the beginning of the end for the Aussies, Brendan. You know, when you say the word end, is this the end for Freddie Flintoff?
It's the end as far as Test cricket goes. Yeah, he's retired. We all know after this amazing victory that that's his last test match for England.
But he couldn't have had a better swan song, really.
Have had a better swan song. You couldn't have gone out in a better way. And I don't know, what do you think, Neil? Were you proud of the way Freddie sent had his send-off.
I think there was a certain amount of poetic justice there, definitely. I mean, he didn't score very highly. He didn't score very highly throughout the whole series, really. He wasn't much cop with the bat. He came in with some amazing bowling performances and helped us out in a couple of tests. Wasn't particularly significant with the ball either in the final test, but he was there, and he's just a presence in the changing rooms, isn't he, if nothing else?
Apparently.
But I think the fact that he was the catalyst for the big fight back when things were going off the rails slightly, no one believed we would lose on that fourth day, but he ran out punting and started the skittles falling, and
it was his first run out in a test match, actually.
Really?
And the interview afterwards is an amazing way to get punting out.
Was the Flintoff factor one of the big differences in England winning this series, Neil, do you think?
I think it was, just because he was a talisman from the 2005 series, and he was, every time he picked up the bat or the ball, he did quite literally send fear through the Australians, and I'm not sure many of the other players did. Certainly their reputations now will have grown, the captain for one, Strauss, and Broad as a bowler. If you read some of the less salubrious press at the moment, Broad's pretty broad in other departments too, according to his girlfriend, but that's an aside. But I think it was interesting, you say at the end of the Aussies, but it was a series on such fine...
It was so finely balanced.
Exactly. And the win of the toss, the England won four times out of five, I think was significant. If you look at the breakdown of the series as well, it was more like a 2-2 series or a 3-2 series. And there was, if it hadn't been for the weather, there should have been results in every game. I mean, Monty and Jimmy holding out and Cardiff there, well, they lost a day and a half anyway. You're not saying they would have held off for an extra day and a half. Australians, again, were saved at Edgbaston by the weather. You know, it was a real action-packed series where there were results always on the cards, you know what I mean? But it was significant that the Australians, I know this happens in tennis a lot, where you get a big server winning more serves, winning more points, but the rally's going longer and the actual guy who didn't win as many games, or points at least, ends up winning the match. But the Australians came out with the most runs and the most wickets taken, which is an interesting fact. You
it
know,
definitely
and
came
losing the series, and with more centurions as well. Apart from, you know, we bumped ourselves up with Trott in the last innings, but on paper we always looked at the weaker side. But team spirit came through.
It was those, I think it was those few individual performances by certain players on certain days. We mentioned Freddie at Lords and Graham Onions, Stuart Broad, as we mentioned, who could be the new David Beckham, so to speak, of cricket. But it was an amazing way to end the series at the Oval.
Essentially, he was gelling the side, I think, whether he performed with the bat.
And he had one leg.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting, Neil, what you say about Flintoff, particularly that test at Lords. And, you know, maybe he's a guy that carries a bit of an X factor. If, you know, his body probably wasn't as... He wasn't in the condition he was back 4 years ago, right? Or
no, he wasn't. He was struggling to make all of the tests. You could see he was in clear pain, but he fought through the barrier. When it really mattered, pain didn't mean anything because he got the job done. And what a send off!
Now we're talking about the big heroes and the big winners of the test. Ricky Ponting, how is this being received back in Australia, Neil? Have we any? He came in for quite a bit of sledging, both on and off the wicket over here.
I think if you lose a test series to England and you're an Australian, you're going to come in for a lot of stick, unfortunately. But he weathered it last time. I think he's still got a lot to contribute to the game. He's still an excellent batsman. I don't think he's over the hill by any stretch of the imagination.
Will he be retained as Australia captain in the future, do you think?
Well, look at the side. Who else is coming through? I still think, in terms of captain and his nous and his his tactics, he's got... Strauss, for one, has a lot to learn from someone like Ponting. You know, Strauss did it and led from the front, but I don't think he always made the right tactical decisions throughout the series, where you can't criticise, apart from the lack of spinning options on the fifth test, you can't criticise Ponting too much.
Well, that's one way definitely to find out how good a captain Strauss is in 2 years' time, seeing if he can go down under and see if he can encourage and captain that team into an Ashes victory down under. But on note of winning the Ashes, we're gonna send this one out to the England team.
Hello and welcome back to the Sports Show on 101.4 on FM. That was Dreadlock Holiday. Now, we've Shakira Lee in the studio, ABA champion boxer. We're going to be catching up with Shakira later on, just all about her sport and, of course, women's boxing, the newest sport in the Olympics. But earlier on today, Bren, we were chatting to Frank Maloney about all things boxing, in particular women's boxing being kind of given the green light for the Olympics and, you know, the rising stock of his newest star, Darren Sutherland. So we're just going to have a quick listen to what Frank had to say, and this is what Frank told the show earlier on.
The decision to grant women's boxing to make it an Olympic sport, was that something that surprised you, Frank?
Well, it never surprised me because of the political correctness in the world and the world going mad, but it's something that I don't agree with, but that's my personal opinion, and I know it doesn't... a lot of people don't agree with it. There are a lot of people for it. You know, I can't see why they would want to bring women boxing into the Olympics, which is a limited number of people taking part, when they could have put netball in there, which is a much better sport for women, and a lot more people compete in that. I mean, I've read where Cuba said they're not even going to send the women's team or interested in sending women to the boxing. And what it's done, it's robbed, I'm not sure if it's one or two men's weights division.
It looks like the light flyweight division is going to go from the men's side.
So, you know, it's affecting that. So, where they would have brought in something like netball, it wouldn't have cut anyone's sport. So, I don't think it's a good idea, and I think it will prove to be a bit of a flop, to be truthful, when they sort of see the quality and the standards of it.
Now, Terry Edwards and the Team GB, they'd probably say, well, there's a lot of upcoming talent there in the amateur ranks, in the ladies' game. Would you kind of buy into that argument?
Well, it depends what sort of quality of boxing you're looking for. You can never compare women's boxing with men's boxing, but you're saying Team GB, but that's going to eat into their funds. I can't see the government putting away a separate allocation of money for women boxing, which is not even tested or proven yet in this country or anywhere in the world, come to that matter of fact. So for them to build a team, their budget has got to be found from somewhere, and I'm sure it's going to come from Team GB.
Now, Frank, just say if it did become very successful and eventually it grew into, you know, developed into pro, obviously it is a pro game in the States, would you ever consider taking on a pro woman boxer?
I went against my wishes and my belief, and I did sign a woman boxer, Laura Sabastini, a lawyer. She had two fights for me, and after that we agreed to mutually end the contract. It showed no interest. It was harder than matching anyone I've ever matched before. It was constant arguing. It was like being married to the woman, never mind trying to manage her boxing career. It was a constant battle. And in the end, we mutually agreed to end the contract. No, I wouldn't be interested in any women boxer.
Is it purely down to reasons of entertainment, Frank? You don't think the market would enjoy it, or it's just, you know, it's a man's sport and that's it?
Well, you know, I do believe boxing was one of the last male-dominated sports. Unfortunately, the female gender have now got through the door. It does insane the interest. I mean, no man wants to go and see two women trying to knock hell out of each other. You know, you go and see two men, it's a little bit different, I think. And, you know, when I had Laura Sapristine on, people used to leave the hall when she was boxing instead of staying there. They would get up and walk out or go to the bar, and all that would be there was a few people that bought tickets for her. I'm not saying she used to sell about 50 or 60 tickets. They were the people that would be there to watch her.
Now, Frank, you have one of boxing's up-and-coming stars in your stable. How is Darren Sutherland progressing with you at the moment?
He's doing very well. Very pleased with Darren. He's had a nice long break over the summer. He's now back into training, and he will be boxing on October the 16th in Sunderland alongside the other British Olympian I've got,
Tony
Jeffries, who lost to the Irish guy in the Olympics, Kenny Egan.
So, is there, you know, could you envisage a situation where both these Olympians face each other down the line?
Yes and no. They both got to keep winning. They've both got, there's got to be a big title on the line, but I think it's a sort of a great fight that, you know, you could see a match up there, maybe a free fight deal there. One in Sunderland, because I know Niall Quinn would love to see a big fight there in Sunderland Football Ground, which has big Irish connections, and then the rematch in Dublin, and then a third fight somewhere down the road. But, you know, that's just a dream of a promoter, but that's what keeps us going.
Would it be another dream, Frank, to match Darren against James De Gale, British gold medal?
You know what, that is the fight that the world would like to see. I'm sure it's a fight the whole of Ireland would like to see. I'm sure it's a fight the whole of Britain would like to see. And that's one that obviously we will aim and work for. But I do think Darren is two or three steps above all the other Olympians at the moment in progress-wise and career-wise. And his next fight will be an eight-rounder.
Is that because of his style, Frank? All action, lots of punches?
No, I think it's just because of the way he is. He's very hard to keep under lock and key. He's very demanding, and he just wants to get it done and get there. So, you know, as long as I've got some control over it and we're monitoring what we're doing, I will sort of take the reins off him a little bit by bit now, and hopefully we will see him move forward.
Frank, Darren Sutherland has got off to a brilliant start to his pro career. Little bit of criticism the last fight, a couple of boxing pundits saying he leaves himself open to taking too many shots by his style. Would you have any comment on that?
He knows what he's done wrong. His training team know what he's done wrong, but you can't go in the rain and not get wet if you haven't got an umbrella. You know, in boxing, you can't get in the ring and not expect to get hit. If you don't want to get hit, take up tiddlywinks.
But he does like a brawl, though, Darren.
That's why the people like him. He's exciting. You know, he's building a great fan base here in Britain as well as Ireland. So, you know, he will become one of the biggest stars out of these Olympians. You know, boxing is crying out for a star. And I'm convinced Darren Sutherland could become that star that boxing is looking for in Britain or Ireland.
Frank Maloney, best of luck to both yourself and Darren. Thanks very much for talking to 1FM Sport.
Thank you.
That was Frank Maloney talking to the show earlier on today, being suitably frank, we could say. We're going to take a quick music break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to ABA Ladies Champion Shakira Lee, so stay with us for that. Hello and welcome back to the Sports Show 101.4 on FM. We're joined in the studio by ABA champion Shakira Lee, ladies champion, and one of her coaches, Kevin Campios. They're very welcome to the show, folks.
Hi.
Shakira, women's boxing has been all over the newspapers the last couple of weeks. Its profile has probably never been bigger, actually, with talk of the Olympics and... You're a champion, an ABA champion at flyweight, 51 kg, and you have your heart set in the next Olympics. Is that true to say?
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. That's my aim. For the next two and a half years, I'm going to be working hard for it.
Now, you're 51 kgs, just for the listeners there. What does that transfer into in stone weight or...?
8 stone, just... Yeah, 8 stone.
Just under 8 stone.
Yeah.
So it's, you know... You're only 8 stone, so people would be thinking, oh, you're, you know, pretty light, pretty small. You're
not
a girl.
Not do much damage, no.
They'd probably think it doesn't fit the, you know, the colour scheme of boxing. But can you tell me how you got involved in boxing yourself?
Well, basically, because my dad, he showed me, because I'm a girl, to look after yourself out there. So I just thought I might as well take it somewhere, because if I've got the skills, and I was at a young age, I was already quite good at it. So then I took up Muay Thai,
okay.
Yeah, and had one bout when I was like 12. I stopped the girl in that, and then that was in Amsterdam, because I lived there for quite a while.
So you're 18 now, is that right?
Yeah.
So you're 6 years now involved in boxing.
Yeah.
And you're an ABA champion now, so that's champion of England, is that right?
Yeah, I was junior ABA champion last year.
Well, you're actually 17, Shaq.
Oh, yeah. All right. I'm 18 in 2 weeks.
Right,
and then...
That's the coach now, yeah. Pulling you up. You're not even in the gym. You're not even in the gym.
And then last month, I think, it was 2 months ago, I became senior champion. Yeah.
So you're 17. You've, you know, you're probably breaking new ground in many ways. Mm. You're kind of ladies boxing. You know, we heard Frank Maloney before the break. We'll be coming back to that later on. But you know, so how do you stay on the top? Are you still in school? Does this involve training every day?
You have to find the motivation, because for like, if it wasn't for my family and everything and my coach Kevin, I don't think, because I don't know, at this age you get misled quite easily, like going out and everything. But I go college and then training, that's basically no. what I do. So I don't even have time for a job. So any sponsors out there, feel free.
Now, a lot of people say, you know, boxing is a lifestyle choice. Like you say, you're either committed to it, and to get to the levels that you have got to, you obviously have to train a lot. Yeah. But can you tell me what it is you enjoy about the sport?
Winning. Yeah. I don't enjoy the training, because training's hard. But actually, going to the actual fights and the whole adrenaline, yeah, the whole adrenaline, and if you think it's fun, it is good.
But you still get nervous before fights, and
because you never know what the opponent's going to be like, so you have to be nervous.
Now, people think you know, pro boxing it's you know, quite tough and brutal, but equally amateur boxing, it is pretty sore when you get hit, right?
Yeah, of course, boxing is boxing. You get hurt. If you don't want to get hurt, then don't box. But,
Now, the gym that you're involved in, I'm just going to bring Kevin in quickly, your coach, for a minute. Can you tell me the name of the gym?
Yes, the Waltham Forest Amateur Boxing Club in Highlands Park, Chingford. And we have various lads and that all levels in the club.
Kevin, this is a big deal, right? You know, women's boxing has been given the green light for the Olympics. It's we shouldn't be biased here on the show, but I think everyone thinks it's a great thing.
As a coach, and Shakira, I'll say this in front of you, I was a bit unsure when I first was a coach there, when Shakira come along. But when I see, and I'm going to give her a big edit, when I see the ability she's got, it's unbelievable. And she certainly changed my way of thinking. When I went to the ABAs last year, the female ABAs, the standard is incredible.
Now, you talk about the ABAs last year, the final, Shakira. Can you tell me, you know, how much you won by to get the title of being champion?
The score was 12-0. I think it was the highest score throughout the whole ABAs.
So you don't lose too often then?
No. Well, touch wood.
The girl she fought was 27 and was a Royal Navy lieutenant in the Royal Navy. So HMS Collingwood, and she was the 2007 champion. Mm-hmm. And Shakira was only 17.
So would you have been aware of these things now before you went to the final, that you were going to be boxing someone 9 years older than you, somebody who's a professional person in the Navy, which is like a tough profession as well, right? Were you aware of those things?
I knew she was in the Navy. I didn't know she was that old, but
did that phase her, Kevin?
She is unbelievably calm, really. If she gets nervous, she doesn't really show it. She focuses herself and she gets up for the fight. Mm. And, you know, it's like last year's ABA champion. But she was gloving up, and I looked at her and she's actually putting the gloves in the wrong hand. And I went, Shaq, other hands. And she starts giggling, switches on, gets in there and wins the title.
So what would you say your style would be? Would you be like, you know, they have the term like boxer or brawler, or would you be like...
Where am I?
I'm Shaq like attack.
A, yeah.
You Shaq told attack. Me about this off air, actually, Kevin.
That says Shaq it all. Attack. Shaq attack.
So it's all action.
Yeah.
It's all action.
Yeah.
And right, and of course, down at the lighter weights, it's always... Yeah. Especially in amateurs, it seems like it's you know, it's a lot quicker. There's a lot more
she's
punches
got incredible
thrown.
Speed. She really has.
Because it's all on point scoring. You have to get in there and get your points in amateur boxing. So you have to be fast, and it has to be action.
Now, are you the only girl involved in your gym, or are there other girls involved?
Well, there's
now as
girls
well?
There that come now and then, but none that really.
Well, it's good when they do come, because Shaq actually gets involved in encouraging them and helping them. And when they see a girl of her ability training, it gives them an incentive that they can achieve it and do it and reach their goals. And And some of the boys in the club are a bit cautious about sparring Shakira as well, because she can whack.
And then the girls can see that actually can be done. It's not a lost hope or anything. So when they see someone that has actually achieved something, that will bring more girls in and they'll actually want to do it as well.
Sure. So in many ways, like you're breaking new ground and a role model for younger girls coming through.
Yeah.
I tell you, we're just going to take a quick music break, folks. And when we come back, we'll be talking more boxing and... probably, you know, there's a bit of controversy in the first part of the show, so we'll just touch off that. So join us after the break.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Now, welcome back to the Sports Show 101.4 on FM. Of course, we're here in the studio with ABA champion Shakira Lee and one of her coaches, Kevin Camp. We just got a text in during the break, a listener saying, what is ABA? So, Shakira, just quick explanation on that one.
ABA is Amateur Boxing Association.
Okay, Amateur Boxing Association. Now, before we went to the break, I was just about to ask you, what's involved in your training, your typical week's training?
Running. Number one.
lots of
it,
I'd say.
6 o'clock.
In the morning, doing the road work.
If I don't, my dad kicks me out, so I'm outside. but to the gym, like your bag work, pads, skipping, groundwork, which is sit-ups and all cardio stuff. Do weights now and then, but not too much because I don't want to be...
Because of the standards you're getting to now, we're actually restructuring the training floor from next week. It's going to be more intense and harder, but because the level of her fighting has got to go up, she's got to fight better opponents. Mm.
Would you be training every day, Shakira?
Nah, not every day.
You've got to have rest.
Needs rest. Because your rest is just as important as training. So.
But when she's not training, she's dancing.
So I'm still exercising.
Now, we'll just bring this in, actually, because there's you actually have another talent as well, Kevin was telling us off air.
Yeah,
tell us
I
a
dance.
Bit about that.
Yeah, street dance, that's what I do, like, in my spare time as a hobby, because boxing isn't really a hobby now, it's getting to a profession a bit. So.
She performs in the street dance, and I encourage that, because with her feet work is fantastic, and I think it helps.
So I'm all round exercising, really, I'm always busy, always doing something, because it gets boring. I try to take a couple of days off, it's just... You're just not
you
doing
just have
anything.
To be going
you have
and go
to do
on.
I'll find her up on a Sunday and I'll say, Shaq, where are you up to? You bored? She goes, yeah, I go home. Do you want to train? We go training. Oh, Shaq.
But you were saying on the break, Kevin, that Shaq, you've done some, I don't know what you call it, choreography with Britain's Got Talent.
No, it's that the street dancing that's in it.
Sorry.
She does that type of street dancing.
Not Britain's
performs.
Got Talent. We're not there yet. We're not there yet.
We'll put that on the to-do list for you now. As well.
This is Boxing's Got Talent.
Now, we listen to, I think generally the public feeling about boxing being in the Olympics has been a very positive one, I think, in most countries who have a tradition of boxing. There has been a few detractors, as we heard early in the break. Has that been disappointing? A few people kind of reacting that way to women's boxing. Do you think you're getting a fair and unfair rap?
Men's boxing as well. There's anti-boxing lobby full stop.
Yeah, but...
Men and women, so...
But is it tougher when there's people in the industry or on the inside of the industry who are actually very much pro-boxing?
You would think that they would be on your side, because boxing is boxing, male or female, same sport, we do the same thing, so...
It's a combat sport, you get judo, girls doing karate, what's the difference?
Isn't it?
And they're, of course, they're all Olympic sports, taekwondo, wrestling, judo.
Females do it, girls do it, and they're good.
Can you tell me just quickly about the scoring system in amateur boxing? Because it is different to the pro game. It's more about skill, is that right?
Yeah. It's more of...
Clean shots, isn't it?
Yeah. The board, like the judges, four judges around the ring, they all have to see it. Because they've changed it now, haven't they? They've got some buzzing system now.
They hit it at the same time.
They all
have
to hit it.
Shot. And in the ABAs this year... Shakira got a 12-0 of clean shots. Obviously, there was a lot more shots thrown, but that was clean, clear shots.
Sure.
And that was against the 2007 ABA champion.
Now, somebody actually told me during the week that there's more sports injuries in football than there is in amateur boxing.
There is. Of course there is. Because What we do is controlled, well, it should be, usually, unless you have the wild ones. But what we do, like, boxing is controlled, and you're going to... if you get hurt, you expect to get hurt. But whereas that's football, it's all kicking and boots, studded boots, everything.
I used to play cricket before I used to play boxing. I give up cricket because I hated getting it with a cricket ball. I've done the boxing, it was a lot better, because at least you can know and you can duck.
Yeah, you know it's coming. You know it's coming, and you learn to duck out of it and block it. But with football, you don't really learn how to do all these movements while you're playing football. So,
Kevin, is there big aspirations now? You're obviously involved in the amateur boxing game, heavily involved, and you know, Team GB, they have big aspirations now for the ladies for the 2012.
It's fantastic. It's like I say, this year, last year's ABAs was good. This year, the standard is incredible, and it's getting better and better. It really is. It really, and I think Team GB can do very well in it from the standard I've seen out there.
Mm.
You know, and obviously that's all the top girls. That's all their goal. Is for the Olympics 2012 if their weight category is entered, obviously, because we're being told it's three weight categories and one of them could be shacks.
Because it gives female boxers something to work for as well. Because if the guys have boxing Olympics, why can't us females? It gives us a light, something to train for. Because if we have all these other championships and ABA championships, like the guys, all these other things throughout Europe, throughout the world. There's World Championships next year, 2010,
which is in Barbados. Which I've got my son turning already.
So then why can't we have the Olympics? It's only fair, to be honest. It's only fair.
Now, there's a very actually high-profile case back in Ireland I've been following in the papers over the last couple of weeks. They have a two-time world and European champion who is really, the Irish Olympic Council have been pushing hard to get the sport included, Katie Taylor. Now, I've just been reading up during the week, she actually is a full-time, even though she's amateur, she's a full-time athlete, and she gets sponsorship and all the rest. Have you got any sponsorship? Can you get that commitment to train the same way?
I'm looking for sponsorship, because as doing college, trying to get your education and trying to train to keep your training standards up to a T, up to your level, it's hard to find a job and get money for equipment, nutrition, even to pay to go to the gym, massage, everything that you need in your sport. So I'm actually really looking for sponsorships.
She's just been awarded some funds
from Sports Aid, the Mayor's Trust, I think it was. Yeah, Mayor's Trust, they gave me some money. So
she was nominated by the ABA, the Amateur Boxing Association of England, for this.
Is that how the process normally works, Kevin?
Do you know what? I really don't know, but it was good, because now she's going to get some more kit and stuff like that.
So that proves that the ABA, they really are taking it seriously. The ABA have taken
it very seriously. It's so organised, it is really good.
Mm.
And like I say, when I first come into it, I was a fighter. I was a bit indifferent about female boxing. I actually don't like watching Shaq fight. Because I've got that bond.
Sure.
Mm.
Yeah, but she gets in there and does the job.
Actually, I'm just going to push in here, Shakira. What does your mum? My mum hates boxing. She sat down and watched Amir Khan a couple of months ago. But that was only because I forced her. But what does your mum think about you in the ring?
Well, my mum, oh gosh, she's a different story.
The last fight, my mum was nearly in the ring, I think.
She doesn't like that, the fact... No one would see your daughter in the ring fighting, having a boxing or anything. But she does support me. But when last year she was screaming, get it!
She can't deny it, because we got it on video.
So she is there. She does support it, though. But she isn't too fond of. No one would be, but.
The Royal Navy, the police, the British Armed Forces all entered female fighters this year for the national championships.
Mm.
Now, do you have a fight coming up soon now?
Yes, the 2nd of October.
That's what we're hoping
against
for.
Against Nina Smith, who is the second.
She was a runner up for the category number two.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that going to take place?
What's that?
Grey's Rugby Club in Essex. Yeah. It's an open show.
Mm.
They said yes, so we just kept waiting for confirmation.
Yeah, it should be a good one, definitely.
And Shaq will fight whoever, when she's ready, obviously.
And any other kind of ladies out there who are interested in getting into boxing after listening to the show, what's the best place?
Contact their local amateur boxing club, wherever they are, or contact the ABA. They have a website, and there's all the information on there. They've got sections on women boxing.
Yeah, because it can be done. Don't think because you're a girl and it was seen as a, you can't see these bunny ears, but a male sport. But yeah, it can be done. If you just put your heart, just put try. Just you just need to try, and you can do it. You can do it.
Okay, Shakira Lee, best of luck in your quest to getting to the Olympics, to show here.
Thank you.
Wishes you nothing but good wishes on that one.
Thanks,
Kevin,
for having me.
Thanks a million for coming into the show. Keep up the good work. And we'll talk to you soon, folks.
No problem.
Join
thanks.
Us after this.
That was good.
Hello and welcome back to the Sports Show 101.4 on FM. That was Shakira Lee and her coach, Kevin Camp. Keep an eye out for them, folks. Could be big come around 2012.
She just showed us a quick clip on her phone as she was going out of her practicing on the pads, and she has a left hook. I tell you, she has a left hook, so definitely watch out for her.
Bren, we're moving on to soccer. Champions League groups, they've just been announced. Is that right this evening?
Yeah, that's right. They've been announced this evening. So I'm gonna stick it to the English club. So we've just got the English clubs. It's all we care about. But Group B has been drawn as Manchester United, CSKA Moscow, Besiktas, and Wolfsburg of Germany. So I don't know what you think. Not an extremely hard draw for Man United. Okay. Our local club Chelsea have been drawn with FC Porto, Atletico Madrid, and Apoel Nicosia of Cyprus. Liverpool in Group E have been drawn with Lyon, Fiorentina, and De Brecken. And Arsenal, the mighty Arsenal, after a great victory over Celtic, will play AZ Alkmaar, Olympiacos, and Standard Liège. So that's the Champions League drawn. That was just drawn this afternoon.
Now we're going to come back and talk about that now in a minute, Brent. But before we do, Neil, you're just you've a few results. Just we give the listeners a quick catch up from the soccer roundup over the week.
In case you've been in Mars for the last week, yeah, I'll just catch you up on the results from last weekend on Saturday. Arsenal continued their fantastic start to the season, winning 4-1 at home to Pompey there. Pompey, well, they've got woes, but I've got a feeling that's going to turn round, and I don't think they're as in bad position as they
hopefully,
claim to be.
Hopefully not this weekend, Neil. They're in my accumulator, but continue on there.
All right, well, we'll give them a bit of breather. Nil all draw, nothing going on at St Andrews, Birmingham v Stoke. Hull had a narrow win against Bolton at the KC. Manchester City continued, but not that impressively, against Wolves, winning 1-0 at home at the City of Manchester Stadium. Sunderland, probably against the run of play, really. 2-1 winners against Blackburn at home. And Wigan, a shocker against Man United, who seem to have found their form after a bit of a stuttering start, whereas Wigan have gone completely the other way. Many plaudits for their win at Villa on the first day of the season, and then they've just gone south ever since, which, if you're from Wigan, going south is probably quite an insult, isn't it? And on Sunday, West Ham narrowly lost out to Tottenham at home. Burnley had a shock result over Everton, 1-0 at Turf Moor, and Fulham lost out to a vastly superior Chelsea at the Cottage. And the final game of the week, the weekend anyway, was Monday's clash at Anfield, where Villa came out 3-1 victors, and more.
We're gonna
more speculation as to Liverpool's terrible start and whether the title race is already over, but I think it's a little premature to say that.
We're going to talk a little bit about that premature or that terrible start for Liverpool in a minute. But just quickly, Neil, the fixtures for this weekend.
Well, this weekend, a few ties actually to look out for. I'll read them all out. We maybe go through some of the more tastier ones. Chelsea at home to Burnley. Blackburn hosting West Ham. Bolton Wanderers have Liverpool. I'd say there'll be a bit of a snarl from Liverpool. They're due a fight back there. Stoke v Sunderland. Spurs v Birmingham. Wolves v City. Hull City. Manchester United v Arsenal, the clash of the weekend by a long hop. And on Sunday, Portsmouth play Man City, Everton Wigan, and Aston Villa are hosting Fulham.
Now, and there's a few, Bren, you looking at the London clubs, or Brentford involved at the weekend?
Yeah, Brentford are involved at the weekend.
Do you want me to go for that?
Yeah, go on.
Okay,
go on,
Brentford, Saturday in League One, are hosting Oldham. That's kick-off at 3. And the other team, QPR, away to Scunthorpe, or Firewall FC, as they're otherwise known as. Again, a
listeners don't know, why is that? Why is that, Neil?
Because if you look at the way you spell Scunthorpe, there's a rude word right in the middle of it, and you put Scunthorpe on an email, it gets bounced by most people's firewalls.
We'll have to try that in the show now, just to check that out.
Scunthorpe hosting QPR, 3 o'clock in the Championship again on Saturday.
Now, very quickly, lads, Liverpool, can they still win the title?
No.
Most definitely, I still have them tipped for the title. If you looked at the game against Villa, just very briefly, you'll have seen that Liverpool absolutely battered them in the run of the play. On another day, it could have been a comfortable win. I just think there's a few little tight screws that need fine-tuning there, but by the end of the season, I'm not saying they're going to win it, but I'm saying they're definitely top three, a certainty for top four. I think other teams, possibly even Man United, more likely to drop out. I know it's slightly controversial.
Brendan,
for teams like City and Spurs.
Brendan, Neil's a very optimistic yes. You're a very pessimistic no.
Yeah, I said you can go back and listen to the podcast. I said before the start of the season that Liverpool were the team to struggle. They had the worst pre-season of the lot. They only beat Thailand in pre-season. And the only team they've beaten since pre-season is Stoke. So, no, I don't... All right, they're going to finish top four. I do believe they're going to finish top four, but I think Arsenal will finish above them. And I think Arsenal beat Man United on the weekend too.
So we're going to keep an eye on that one now, see who's right and who's wrong here in the studio.
I don't disagree with you, though. Arsenal are in a fine position. I think a lot of people underplayed their hand before the season started. I can't rate Arshavin enough. You know, that guy...
Russian magician.
That guy took Liverpool apart, all four goals last season, and I think he's just going to be the standout player.
First goal last night since his four at Anfield.
That was his first goal last night against Celtic. He only came on, it was his first touch of the game last night against Celtic. 3-1 Arsenal won
against
Celtic.
Now, speaking of European football, which was Arsenal-Celtic last night, Bren, you named the groups at the straight after the break.
Yep.
Anyone got a real favourite draw there?
I think Arsenal have got a fairly, as I am an Arsenal fan, but I think Arsenal have got a fairly easy draw. I think out of the teams, it would either be Liverpool or Chelsea who have got the hardest draw. Liverpool obviously playing Lyon and Fiorentina, two tough games. Chelsea also have to play Porto and Atletico Madrid. So they're two tough groups. I think Arsenal have got the easiest of the four English teams.
Yeah, United generally get a good run, don't they? Always in the group stages. I can't remember the last time they had a difficult one. But yeah, I've got a sneaky eye on Atletico to do something this year. They've got a fantastic... Certainly their first starting 11 is world class.
Yeah.
And Porto always seem to make the final stages, don't they? Perennial quarter-finalists. So Chelsea have got their work cut out, definitely.
Lots to look forward to there anyway in the Champions League. But switching quickly to Formula One, Bren.
Formula One, yeah. We had the Valencia Grand Prix on the weekend. It was the road race, which was won by Rubens Barrichello. Britain's own Lewis Hamilton finished second with Kimi Raikkonen and Ferrari in third. We were all let down that old Michael Schumacher couldn't make the race with his dodgy neck.
Disappointed about that, Neil? Are you a big Formula One fan?
I follow Formula One, but I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan. I think recently the changes they made at the end of last season have really improved the whole format, and you've got a system where it's almost swapping on the rate of your MotoGP playthings. Do you know what I mean? How someone like Button can start so well a season and Hamilton being nowhere, and then change the track and it's all changed. Do you know what I mean?
It's amazing how from race to race the car, the intricacies of the car and the details of the car can be changed and make a massive difference. But at the moment, Jenson Button is still leading the championship with 72 points, followed by Rubens Barrichello with 54 and Mark Webber with 51.5. Before we go, lads, I know this is new, but I want to get a few random facts in that you may not have known this week in the sports team. We're going to end up this with the sports team. I'm going to rush through it.
Throw them out, Brent.
I've only got a minute. Did you know that Marcus North is the first Australian named Marcus to play test cricket?
Didn't know that. Did you know that?
No.
Did you know that in 2007, Arsenal's manager Arsene Wenger had an asteroid named after him? Did you know that?
I think I'd heard that, yes.
Right. Say a few Celtic
fans
wouldn't mind if they hit him now this week.
Jessica Ennis, Britain's world heptathlete champion, was born on the day of the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster on the 26th of January 1989. But the best one, because of the cricket, we won the Ashes at the Oval. Did you know? I know you know, Neil, so I'm not looking at you.
Stump.
The Oval was the venue of the fifth Ashes test, hosted the first ever FA Cup final in March 1872. There you go.
Brent, I don't know. Anyway.
It's left us speechless. It's left us speechless.
Better the weekend before we go. Four-team accumulator. Chelsea, Spurs, Wolves and Man City all to win. 6-1 with Paddy Powers. So I'm just having a tenner here. So cash in next week.
What do you think my odds are?